Chariot Developer News, episode number 39 for Tuesday, October 18th, 2011. I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Jason Gritman.
And here we are, exactly a month and 8 days later than the last dev news. Maybe we should just call this like a semi-reoccurring news segment. But anyway, so we're here to bring you all the tech news that we find interesting. And we would be stepping over the biggest rock in the world if we didn't talk about the first one, right? So let's talk about Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And now you had an article from Stack Overflow, right?
Yeah. So this is Joel Spolsky. Very sad, but he talked a lot about what Steve Jobs brought to programmers, whereas before him, programmers were very technical, you know, always talking about technical specs and this and that, and he really brought to life that, you know, things need to be simple to use, things need to be elegant, and it matters more that, you know, people have, you know, 1,000 songs in their pocket rather than, you know, whatever crazy thing people have invented.
What was it, kilobytes or megabytes or gigabytes? Yeah. And that was always powers of two, so it's like, well, it's not really a million. It's, you know. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to summarize anybody's life, you know, and what they did. And obviously we'd be doing what everyone else is doing. But that said, I mean, if you think about everything that he helped innovate, I mean, he wasn't necessarily the biggest technologist in the group, but he had the passion, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, one thing I can think of is there was a fitting tribute to him too. Was the night the news of his death was reported? It was Hacker News. All 30 articles at one point were all Steve Jobs related. It was incredible to see that.
Who else would have that kind of impact?
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, this was the guy who invented programming languages, but he was someone that meant a lot to the developer community.
Right.
And I mean, even you see it now. I mean, you go to any conference, everyone's using a Mac. I mean,
it's very true.
Yeah.
Or an iPad or an iPhone.
Yeah. And I was someone who loved the Macs back in, when I went to Drexel, we had about Macs were the standard computer for the school, and they were on their way out. It was back in 1996, and for a year or two there, I didn't have a Mac, and was so happy once they became viable machines for developers.
The PowerBooks.
Yeah.
I remember I rented my first PowerBook in, I don't know, 2005, and it was one of the people that worked with me, he said, hey, check this out, you have no idea what you're missing. Yeah. And so I sat down with this PowerBook, and I went, I want that. Went right out and bought myself one, and I really haven't looked back. In fact, I was even doing, at the time, I was doing a .NET project because I was thrown in one of those, and I just worked in virtual PC, I guess it was, to boot up SQL Server, and I'm like, I'm not going to go into that. Windows operating system, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what he did. And, he and Steve Wozniak. Mm-hmm. Now, did you order, I don't know, there's apparently the biography's coming out. Did you order the biography?
No, not yet, but I'm planning on reading it.
I think it's coming out pretty soon, if it isn't already, so... Yeah, that's pretty amazing. He had such an impact.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on then. So yeah, that's Blog Stack Overflow, and I'm assuming there's at least a fair number of comments. I mean, look anywhere, you're going to trip over it. Oh, the other thing I thought was interesting, and I keep pointing out This Week in Tech, all the podcasts by Leo Laporte, and they had a really good tribute to Steve Jobs, and they were stressing things, they're stressing things like, you know, what he did from an arts perspective. You know, he always made sure the design was on the important, right? But there was an interview in Fresh Air, and they played an excerpt. I guess they did one in 2000. Actually, it was right before he left Next to go back to Apple again. And, you know, he said that the thing that he brought to it was a liberal arts education to computers. He said that most computers are boring, stuffy, gray boxes, you know, and that he always wanted to create a box that you could immediately get comfortable with, get in there, use, not feel like it was intimidating, like you were saying before. And, you know, he took classes like, you know, he took an art class and I took a design class and learned about typography. He always talks about this. He learned about the fact that, you know, there's leading and kerning and fonts in regular type. And if it wasn't for Steve Jobs pushing for actual fonts on the Mac, we would have all still had the 80-character simple Courier crap font that we all dealt with for years, right? So he was really the first person to put type and typography in the Macintosh. And, you know, that led the way, and Windows had to respond. So
yeah. I remember reading, even for the Apple II, he wanted, you know, he was so focused on the look and feel of the case itself, and wanted even to look nice underneath the covers too. It's just such a vision, and it's it's the world's a sadder place.
Yeah, it's funny. I felt the same way. Like when George Harrison died, mm-hmm. I was a big Beatles fan. Mm-hmm. So you know, and of course, the first time I ever got into music was mm-hmm. I was a little kid and John Lennon died, mm-hmm. and I had no idea who he was, and that took me down the road of being a musician. Mm-hmm. So George Harrison, same feeling. I got the same kind of feeling for Steve Jobs. Like, well, we lost someone big in our industry. All right. So well, let's keep going then. And I just closed out my recorder, didn't I? Oh, I'm an idiot. Hold on a second. Window.
Are we off the air?
No, we're still recording.
Oh, okay.
See, I'm so distraught, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. All right, let's go back to the list. So, all right, next one. Why don't I throw my Rue thing out here? So, I've been working on this Rue in Action book. Some of you who know me with Srini Penskala and our own Gordon Dickens. I've been working on this for about 2 years now almost. And it's to the point where Spring Rue, which is basically like a Ruby on Rails kind of platform for Java, it's a rapid app platform where you build, you know, models and views and controllers and services and repositories, but it's very Spring-centric. So this tool is really making the rounds now. Version 1.2 has really kind of matured it for just about every area of it to the point where people can look at it and say, yeah, this is potentially viable to me. So I've been working on the book, We did the last draft, I thought, sent it out for, you know, the Manning Early Access. It came out. We're waiting on two small chapters to wrap up. And then I checked my build at 4 a.m. and everything broke. And it's because the Rue team keeps innovating. I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. And so I put an article out on rimple.com, R-I-M-P-L-E.com. Just around the book, and it kind of documents a few of the things they've done. It's actually interesting. The breaking changes really make sense. So for the history of it, you know, Rue always had this centric database philosophy of running in JPA, right? So if you're a Java persistence person, you're basically writing generators for JPA code behind the scenes, right? So every entity you build is a JPA entity. It's basically backed by Hibernate or OpenJPA or something. So they then decided they were going to add this API from Spring called Spring Data. Spring Data is like their abstraction of data, right? And they've got like a NoSQL Spring Data abstraction and a relational Spring Data abstraction. So they jammed in the relational abstraction for the first push of Rue 1.2. They added, and I mentioned this in the last time we did our dev news, they added repositories and they added services. And the repositories are all backed by the Spring Data JPA auto-generated stuff. So it'll generate all the CRUD objects for you and everything. Cool. But the thing is, they also had added MongoDB support. So they had, you know, you could say in Rue in the commands to set it up, you could say in the Rue shell, you could say entity and then give it the information, or you could say entity Mongo and the information. And suddenly now you have a Mongo NoSQL data store object, right? Okay, cool. But just yesterday, they put in a refactoring change where now you can say, you know, repository JPA or I think it's entity JPA now. But the bottom line is when you build this stuff, it changes the annotations a little bit and it doesn't make it assume that you're using JPA anymore. So all the annotations are slightly tweaked. They even also did the same thing for the web tier because they were assuming you were going to do Spring MVC and the rest were all add-ons. So there was a web MVC setup. They decided to make a web JPA setup. And while they were in there, they added a scaffold package to all the scaffold annotations, and so now that breaks. So if you're doing Rue and you're on the edge of Rue, working on the trunk, you need to be aware of this stuff, especially if you're developing add-ons for the 1.2 release. So if you head over to the blog, rimple.com, I have an article that I'm going to keep updating a bit until I just dive headfirst into updating the book that kind of goes through how to do it. And in the end, I have a little tiny... it looks like it's syntax errors, but I have a little tiny sample of how to create a project both in MVC and JSF. And you can see it's exactly the same, except you say web JSF setup instead of web MVC setup. So I think they're moving that way towards things like DWT and other things too. So Rue is definitely changing. I love the fact that they added the services and repositories. And you could say when you create an entity, you can say active record false, and it says fine, I'll assume we're going to use repositories and I won't put the code in the entity. So if you're a traditional Spring programmer, you're not going to like that. You'll just be used to your regular stuff and it will still work with Rue. And the fact that they're not just dumb generated pieces of code, they're using the Spring Data API, which is pretty powerful. So lots of changes with Rue on 1.2. If you looked at it back in 1.1, you really need to give it a look when 1.2 gets the release candidate status. The other thing I wanted to mention is they're actually adding multi-module support to Rue in this release. So you can create a web module, you can create a jar module, and you can create a POM to organize them all. Now, they might go a little further than that, maybe an ear, but that's as far for now. But that means you could truly put your services and repositories in a separate project, which is what a lot of teams kicked Rue out and said, you know what, if it's just a web app only, this is not sufficient for our needs. So they've heard that. They're going to address it. So anyone who's bored with Rue, ignore me for now, and then I'm done. But anyone who's interested in Spring Rue, yes, the MEEP is still available, and I just added two chapters on plugins at manning.com/rimple, and I have that blog entry at rimple.com. So that's all the Rue news that's fit to talk about. Let's talk about the book you have here, Elements of Computing Systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's mentioned on Hacker News maybe about a month ago now. I don't have a traditional computer science background. I've never built a compiler. I've never done assembly language programming. And this seemed very interesting to me. Basically, the concept of the book is you start with the basic building blocks, NAND gates, and you build up your chips one by one. It's all done in a hardware simulator.
Ooh, cool.
In there. But by the time you're done, you're developing in a Java-type language like Tetris games and Space Invaders. And so I'm about halfway through right now. I'm doing like the CPU and implementing like the arithmetic operations. And it's been really interesting. And it's just fun. As a developer, you work in higher level languages, and there's a lot of magic that goes on underneath the scenes, and sometimes it can seem like maybe scary magic, or you just don't know. But it's so eye opening to have that opened up. So the link takes you to the book's page. The book's text is available online. You can order the physical book too. There's a video somewhere on here with the author gives you like a 10-minute overview. There's also a Google Tech Talk video that's about an hour long where he'll actually cover the ins and outs of the course. The slides are slides, exercises, and it's like a swing app where you simulate everything. But it's
so it's in Java, so you can run it on any platform, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've been running on my Mac. I think that it was written before Mac was real big, so it's definitely the instructions are Unix and Windows, but
yeah, it's 2005. But the thing is, these concepts are never they're invariant, right? Mm-hmm. You need to know how to do parsing and machine language concepts, and how computers organize things. And I think the digital gates thing is a great thing to learn, because then that was one of the first things that I learned when I went to college was I had a course in electronics and a course on digital computer fundamentals, and that was nothing but gate building. Mm-hmm. And you learned about, I don't know if they get into this here, but you learned about how to simplify logic. Like, you build a bunch of gates, a bunch of ands and ors and nots. And then there's this concept called Carnot mapping, which is like the reduction of logic. And that blew my mind at the time, but it made it very easy for me to reduce logic in the real world, And that's what they do when they were designing chips. They're like, well, okay, this is the great first pass. Now, the thing is, this is going to cost us a lot of money for all these chips, so can we reduce it down to its simplest form? And that was Carnot mapping. But even that little thing, like, you run into that. That's what I learned in my digital computers class. So I'm going to check this one out. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah, they don't – and there isn't much – there's in the very chapter, it says more reading. So basically, you build all the gates and you understand. It doesn't get much into the optimization piece.
Right, I'm sure.
You can even see some of the chapters. It's like, well, there's an optimized version of this. Use this chip instead of the one you built. And you built the logic, but we didn't optimize it. So,
right.
It's not the focus, but it's still really eye-opening. And
so you're doing machine code kind of too at some point? Or
yeah. So
assembly, that kind of thing?
Yeah, with the chapter I was working on, basically you were just there's like languages in there. So basically there's languages designed just for this book with real simple syntax.
That's really cool. That's great. Yeah, it's great to have like one book that's a good reference for like the initial fundamental principles.
I mean, he says it's for either someone, maybe after they've done like intro to computing and it's a good overview, or it might be someone good at the end of their, if they want to get more out of it, just do it at the end of a computer science curriculum and really, explore some of the concepts beyond the book to to integrate everything together. So.
And this is Noam Neeson and Shimon Chakan, The Elements of Computing Systems, Building a Modern Computer from First Principles. And we'll put a link in the show notes to that book. Mm-hmm. I want to bring up another one that we were looking at last year at Chariot. There are a couple people here that were really deep into another MIT Press book. This was MIT Press, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is a classic too, and this is one where I didn't go through the MIT type style program at all. So, it's called Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs, Second Edition, and that's another classic too by Abelson and Sussman. And they go through, actually with that one, they go through Lisp. to use all the programming concepts, and we had a few Lispies in here. So they were going, you know, they were looking at that, and what's the other language that's Lispy-like?
Closure.
Closure. They were using those. So, you know, things like tail recursion versus basic, I guess, head recursion and all that kind of stuff. So if you really want to feel dumb, read that book. But it's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is excellent. I sat in a few of those courses, and, yeah, it was everything's over my head, but I felt like I learned a lot. Yeah,
You pick some stuff up from it.
Yeah, and there's also videos. The two authors of this book, somewhere online. I have a bunch at home. You can download. I guess it was a class they gave to HP. That was, basically just going over the concepts of the book. And I watched a bunch of those videos too.
So, were they free videos just sitting online?
Yeah, they're free videos. They don't stream. Maybe someone's put them up on YouTube at this point. But
or I mean, maybe in iTunes, perhaps, yeah. Because they have the university thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's on there. Cool.
But I downloaded it. It's very good stuff.
So. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I always love looking at the different books. Mm-hmm. If you have any books that you like, you want to share, or just comments about a book that you read that blew your mind technically, go ahead and send us a little note at TechCast on Twitter, or you can email us at TechCastFeedback@ChariotSolutions.com. All right, let's see. What's this? Oh, yes. So this is another one you brought to the table. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the article called Cleaning on Marco.org.
Yeah. So Marco is the developer of Instapaper.
A great app.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome app. Mm-hmm. But he ran into some pain for his iOS 5 update. Instapaper, you mark something as read as later using like an Instapaper bookmarklet. It'll download it to your iOS device. And you can get read that. Basically, you get on the plane and you have a whole bunch of blog posts or something. You get on the subway. You travel. I guess that Marco lives in New York City, so that's how he came up with the idea.
Oh yeah, sure.
The problem he's having now is with iOS 5, he's used to store his stuff in the caches directory, and that used to be a safe place to put it. Now when it syncs up to make room for, say, like a news, when it needs to clear space, say you download a new newspaper or magazine, it clears out the caches directory. So Instapaper article, people are losing their Instapaper articles. So this is implications for anyone, I guess, developing something similar on iOS 5. He says there's a documents directory too that does get backed up that won't get cleaned out, but he's a little worried about approval, and it's not really the place it belongs. So he's kind of here advocating for a third place, someplace that's across between
like a persistent cache.
Yeah, caches, but it doesn't have you don't have to worry about it going away.
Intermediate storage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, and there really is no other option at this point, I guess, right? You either have to assume it's going to get cleared out. Mm-hmm. Or put it in your documents.
Yeah, so.
Huh. So he's worried he would get kicked out of the, when he submits an update, they would kick it and say you're not supposed to put things in there.
Yeah, in documents, because especially if you're storing a lot of stuff in there, because that's what gets backed up to iCloud now.
That's a big deal, because if you think about it, I'm traveling in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be on a two-legged journey in a plane, so I definitely want to load a bunch of stuff up and keep it with me on the iPad, but knowing that something else can push things out of cache, that would make me a little frustrated, you know? Yeah. So I can see where that could be a problem. All right.
But he's a lot of good technical detail there. And
I'm scrolling through. There's a ton in here, actually. Yeah. Well, he has a really good point here. He says, it gets worse as you consider how often re-downloading data, because he was thinking about, I guess, re-downloading the data, like he could always provide that service. But what if you go, offline a lot, or he says, roaming, international roaming? Have you ever been mugged by roaming? I mean, it's really expensive, and this stuff is not, you don't get a lot of data with the data plan when you roam. So that could be extremely expensive for people. So, yeah, that could be an issue. So did he say what he's going to do for short term? Is he going to put it in?
I think he's just living with it and, unfortunately.
And re-downloading, I guess. Yeah.
But.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a short dev news this week. I think that's everything we had, right?
Those three. Let's
see. I think that's it, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a short week for the dev news. That's okay. We just want to get one out there. We're going to try to be a little more regular on it. We'll see what we can do about that. Turns out that, and I just saw this on Twitter, our favorite, because we plan it, our favorite technology show, Philly Emerging Tech, is open for registration already. So let me see if I can find the note. Yep, here goes. Registration for Philly ETE is 2012 is now open. This is apparently my tweet from Tracy. We'll be announcing speakers in November, but why wait? And there are some amazing. I can't tell you anything because they will shoot me. But I go to the website here. It's phillyemergingtech.com. And then there's a /2012. I think it redirects you to automatically. Mm-hmm. And register is there. There's no information yet, but there will be. We're working on it now. I know that some people at Chariot are busy setting the site up. So if you know you're going to go, let me just put it this way. From all the people I've talked to and the committees I'm on, you want to go to this one. This one is just as good and in some ways better than last year. There's some amazing people we snagged that I can't say anything about until you see it. But let's just say that there are movers and shakers in the industry, just like last time. And some of the ones we get will surprise you. So April 10th and 11th, 2012, at the Sheraton Society Hill, Philadelphia, PA. The only other thing I'll tell you is from our training perspective, we've got a number of special training events through the end of the year. And so if you go to our website, you'll see that there's a savings on the Core Spring course, Enterprise Integration. I think we're going to put a Rich Web course back up again because there's been some demand for that. And I know we have a Hibernate with Spring course, which that always sells well. And it's a very good 3-day course. If your budget's not really ready for the 4-day ones, it's a nice, I think we're pricing it $1,500 per seat, which actually is pretty good for that training because it gets very in-depth with Hibernate. So, and we go into JPA. So we don't just do the Hibernate annotations. We do all JPA annotations. So you can take it and use it on other platforms if you need to. All right, that's it. So again, you want to get to our show notes page, you can hit techcast.chariotsolutions.com. Get us on Twitter at techcast. I'm at K Rempel.
Jay Gritman.
And that's it. So we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Take care.
See you.